I hope the PSNI tell him to ring the Garda in Buncrana. I think he did upload it, the information to An Garda Síochána, because the offence happened in the Republic. I hope the dash cam got the reg. Yes, indeed it did. And you can see quite clearly it's a younger, fair-haired guy that's driving the vehicle. And, you know, like, the best thing in the world would be for him to maybe have his driving behaviour changed. Because, you know, we don't want his mum and dad to get that knock at the door. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it was a stupid thing in a moment in time, or maybe it's how he drives. He needs to stop. And since then, we've had more contact from people sending in dash cam footage of really quite dangerous overtaking manoeuvres. It's really quite remarkable as to what you see. And we'll show you some more of those. That's one of the advantages of watching the show, because we're able to play out the video from our listeners as we get it in as well. So I'd always encourage you, if you can, if it suits your way of going, to watch as well. If you ever have Martin McDermott on your station, can you ask him, as chair of the DCB scheme, why is he not openly calling on backing from all elected TDs to support the concerns of the NSA? I presume this is, I don't know specifically the concerns you talk of there, but I'll ask any question at all if it helps to get answers. Don't worry about that. Hi, Greg. Another water burst in Clonmany this morning. Another one. My God, they're going through it, aren't they? Do we know why there's a huge wait time for driving tests? I checked the status of mine, and a 7-month wait, and that's only an estimate. Could be longer. Well, one of the reasons is the fact that we don't have enough testers. What is it? 2 in Letterkenny, 1 in Donegal Town, or 3 in Letterkenny, 1 in Donegal Town, and none in Buncrana. That's the reason. And if one of them's off sick, that's a whole day, or could be potentially a whole week of a backlog. Shannon was telling me a little earlier on, and I'm not suggesting anyone do this, but apparently people are going to Georgia to get their driving tests done. It's a European country, not in the EU, and people are spending £500 or £600 flying to Georgia and then transferring the license from there into an Irish driving license. That's how desperate people are getting. I will talk again about the cancellations. It might not suit everyone. It does take a little bit of commitment, but there is, when you go in to check the process of your test on the website, there is a button you can click and it'll tell you if there's any cancellations. They do pop up in Donegal. You have to be really, really quick and flexible. And there's ones all over the country. Normally there's one cancellation available in the country for the next day or the day after. It depends how desperate you are, but that's what we had to do with Aaron. And there's a couple of other young people in the family as well who needed their cars. And you stick at it, you will get something in 3 or 4 days. We got 2 in Donegal for 2 of the young people, if you know what I mean. One got them themselves and I got Aaron's. But you have to keep refreshing, you have to keep checking. But the cancellations are there and they go live as soon as they're cancelled. So there's no midnight stuff. And if you're really desperate, there are cancellations that come up down the West Coast. You know, it does happen. So I don't know. That's the reason why there's huge wait times, is because there's very few people. I'll double check the stats. I think it's 4 for Donegal, covering the whole county, and there's none permanent in Buncrana. One goes in and out. All right, we're going to just reflect on the what seems to be a really positive development in the campaign for the Little Angels for September 2025. I do have to take the bingo numbers, and then I'll be right back with that.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Now, campaigners with Don't Forget Our Little Angels for September 25 were due to hold a protest at the Market Square in Letterkenny yesterday. That was scrapped because Minister of State with Special Responsibility for Special Education, Michael Moynihan, confirmed at the end of last week that all children looking to secure a place at Little Angels Special School will be accommodated. 9 families came together to campaign for appropriate school spaces for children over the past 2 months amongst them. And speaking publicly was Aoife, parent and campaigner. Good morning, Aoife. And how was your weekend, I suppose, because it kicked off with the news that you perhaps weren't allowing yourself to expect coming?
No, Greg, we definitely, after speaking to you on Friday morning, we definitely weren't expecting to receive that news on Friday evening. So definitely it was welcomed by all the parents.
The solution is four modular units on the old school grounds. So that leaves 10 families with school places. Is that the best we could have hoped for? Is that the solution to this issue, given the capacity constraints on the new site?
I definitely think it's the best quick solution for our kids to be able to go in September this year. But it was something that we have. It's not our long-term solution. So it's as we said, that was only maybe for this year, next year. But then we definitely have to look at the moving forward, what the long-term plan is for the kids. So that's something that we will have to keep pushing for as well.
And the kids that come behind them. Because the
100%.
This campaign's not just about these planning. Children. Yeah. It's about all of our children. And there was some concern too, wasn't there? That okay, we could maybe find places, but they wouldn't necessarily be in the community or wouldn't be adequate. Those fears are somewhat allayed then. So because I mean, as I say, it's not ideal, but they are in the old school grounds. They are in the local area.
I think our major concern when they said that was that we wouldn't be even on the grounds of Little Angels. That was definitely squashed when the announcement came on Friday for all of us. Yeah,
and I suppose it talks to how successful a campaign can be if people organise. I've said this before, Aoife, if people organise and make enough noise. You know, I know it was not nice having to speak publicly, or not nice having to get on a bus and sleep out overnight in Dublin, or even, you know, having to call politicians out directly. But unfortunately, that's what it's take. But that's what you did, and you were successful. So I think fair play to you.
I definitely think a group of us, we need to advocate for the kids. It definitely is a nationwide problem, as I've highlighted with you before, Greg. And we were just extremely lucky that we could put forward solutions for them. But there definitely is families throughout the country that that are still fighting and still looking for a space for their children. So we were definitely some of the lucky ones here in Donegal.
Yeah, and I think really, as you say, you know, this is really hopefully a reminder that we're not just using a sticky plaster, that we need proper facilities for the children now, but also, as I say, for children that are coming of age in the years to come. We can't be doing this every year like school bus places or some other issue. This is just too big and too important. It has to be properly resourced right across the country and county.
Yeah, I think this year for sure it was definitely highlighted throughout the country that it's as you said, that it's a sticky plaster that they've been using for over the last numerous years, but it seems to be definitely worse this year. So it's definitely something that the government and the department needs to look at, because you said, like, some families aren't able to fight. We were just very lucky that there was 8 of us that got together and were strong enough to fight. But there's families out there struggling on a daily that just wouldn't have the strength to fight. And if we didn't have the strength to fight, like, our kids still would be sitting here without a space today. And it really isn't good enough on the government and the department that we had to fight for our kids, because, as we said, like, they're the most vulnerable children in society. And the fact that we have to fight on a daily for them anyway to get services and everything, it just was really sad that it had to come to that we had to fight for their right to education.
Yeah, and it is their right, and it's their right to be treated equally like all children. Okay, listen, Aoife, thanks for your time. Thanks for your time, and thanks for coming back on just to give us an update on it. We really appreciate it, and fair play to you and all of the families involved, and let us know if anything slips or if there's any other anything else we can do.
Yeah, we definitely will.
All right, then. Thanks, Aoife.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. Take care of yourself. That's Aoife there. Let me see. I'll go to line two now, because Anne Owens is there. And Anne Owens is a familiar voice as one of the people who started the Defective Block campaign about 15 years ago and has fought the vulture funds and banks and what have you. Anne, thanks for joining us this morning. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
And I suppose when you frame it like that, that, you know, this has been going for 15 plus years and we're sort of still at it. It's remarkable what people have had to endure and have endured over those 15 years in sometimes the most difficult of circumstances.
Well, you know, Greg, I just describe what has happened as almost like a Shakespearean tragedy, a complete and utter farce. I call it a comedy of errors. I mean, we're going back to, you know, quarries not been tested, block manufacturers not been supervised or their products checked, EU standards not being adhered to, the council insisting on using Cassidy blocks, even as they witnessed the blocks in their social housing estates failing. They were still bringing in lorry loads to build stage two with the same blocks. Until campaigners stood out in the rain and actually stopped their lorries entering a housing estate in Cairn with 50 houses, which are now lying empty, and stopping those lorries going in there with the self-same blocks that were already failing all over the country. You know, I mean...
It started to bring it home, all right.
It's unbelievable.
And all of this sort of was discussed and talked of on Saturday in On Green on Hotel Bird. Did you learn anything from that? You spoke, and I want to speak. I want to speak to you about what you spoke about. But I'm just wondering, even as someone so involved in this from the get go, you know, when everything's all laid bare there in PowerPoint displays and videos and information sheets, did you learn anything from it?
Well, you know what? It wasn't a matter of learning. It was just sitting. It was an amazing experience. It was an absolute privileged to be there, sitting among the world's leading concrete fraternity, listening to IS 465 being completely debunked, in fact, being completely rubbished. You know, we know now, without any doubt, that MICA is not the cause of the degradation of homes. Freeze thaw action is not the cause of degradation of homes. And it is one thing and one thing only that has caused degradation of homes, and that is internal sulfate attack. You know, elements like pyrite, pyrrhotite, thomasite. And people say to me, well, you know, you campaigners, you got it wrong. I'm a campaigner, Greg. I'm not going to say sorry. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a geologist. I'm not a photographer. And none of the campaigners are. What is worth stating is that the government got it so wrong. They got it wrong at every turn. And it was their job. It was their job to get it right.
One of the, visually, the pictures of houses that are impacted by defective concrete blocks, it's easy to illustrate, you know, because you can see a house. We know what houses are supposed to look like, and we can see them as they grade, or you can see an image of, you know, Paddy Diver kicking in a breeze block to the insulation with a steel-toed boot. Very descriptive. But one thing it's difficult to capture, and I've tried to capture over the years, is the human impact of this, the toll this has taken on people. Because we try and talk positive stuff as well, but often we're platforming the difficult situations that people find them in. And the difference that we have here in the Northwest is for many individuals and their families, and there's an extra layer. There's the defective concrete layer on top of what we're already dealing with in our life. And you recounted the story of a friend of yours, and it was dealing with DCB, dealing with people taking over mortgages, vulture funds, etc. Can you talk to us a little bit about that person's experience?
Absolutely. My friend Jim, his ability to earn a livelihood, he was a domestic appliance serviceman. So he was out in the community working. He was in hotels, pubs, people's homes. So you had the COVID pandemic, and during that 2.5 years, his ability to earn a living was completely arrested by the COVID pandemic. And immediately following the COVID pandemic, he was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic cancer. So that then resulted in his being dependent on social welfare. So first you had 2.5 years of COVID pandemic money, the COVID payment, followed by bare subsistence social welfare. And during that period, Jim had to make a decision. And the decision was, do I eat or do I pay my mortgage? Jim had been paying his mortgage at this stage for 20 years out of, you know, his mortgage was for 25 years, but he paid religiously for 20 years. But through no fault of his own, his ability to pay was totally arrested. So his mortgage became what is known in circles as an NPL, a non-performing loan. And the mortgage was sold by his lender.
And just to, let people know what that means is a lot of people with banks closing, they would have seen them moving, they would have seen the performing loans move between pillar banks. So from Ulster to AIB or Ulster to BOI or wherever it might be, the ones that were categorised as NPL were sold off as bad debt discounted.
They were sold off, Greg, they were sold off to vultures. Why? Because the banks did not want to be associated with what they called, you know, mortgages in distress. They couldn't really be seen to be kicking people out of their houses, people they had given mortgages to, kicking people out of their houses. But let's be honest, in a 25-year mortgage, Greg, there is every chance that sometime during that 25-year period, every mortgagee is going to get into some kind of trouble, whether it's...
I was getting the letters separation, for 10 years,
separation, divorce, whether it's an accident in a car, whether it's a long-term illness, whether it's a mental health illness, anything could happen to come between you and your mortgage over a 25-year period. And COVID was something that had never happened before. And then you had, like, stage 4 cancer. You were not going to work. You were going to be going through a treatment that nearly took your life to try and save you. So that was where Jim Thompson found himself.
And the... vulture funds can be the Wild West, high interest rates, no one actually to talk to, no payment plans, no engagement necessarily with MABS. I mean, they have bought this debt low. They don't have, they'll do anything to try and make a profit off that investment. And was that his experience?
Absolutely. I mean, Jim was a very ill man. And so I took over as advocate. I didn't even allow Jim to open the, because I was getting copies. When I became an advocate, I had to do sign up and I did not allow Jim to open the correspondence that came from the vulture. It was just too much. Jim had to concentrate on trying to negotiate a terminal illness. So I did not allow him, but I took it on. I took it all on as a sort of an executive. But as you say, vulture funds were brought in. They were wheeled in by the government in and around 2008. Not only was it bad enough that we had the MiCA scandal where people were losing their houses, but on top of that, to add insult to injury, the government brought in and wheeled in these funds, these vulture funds, to actually clean up these non-performing loans. Mm-hmm. So these were ordinary families who in good faith had taken out a mortgage, and now they were their mortgage has been sold off without their knowledge or consent. I mean, Jim Thompson received a letter one day and he could not believe it, that his mortgage had already, without his knowledge or consent, Greg, had been sold to a vulture fund. And what are vulture funds? Their role is generally to jump in within 5 years, make as much money as they can, and get out.
Just to remind people that they buy these mortgages discounted, and they have teams of people to make your life a misery, be it through letters or phone calls to bombard you to try and to get them off your back, effectively.
Yeah, they have very, because I dealt with them for 3 years. They have people very, very, very professional, with very professional talk, but I would say that are almost robotic. They're almost robots. I think they are actually trained to be dehumanized.
Jim sadly passed away in July 2024, and there was life insurance in place, wasn't there? And the story takes another twist, really, in terms of what some of these companies are capable of.
Yeah, so immediately following the death, the Vulture Fund contacted me and they began proceedings to liquidate the life insurance. Now, Jim had managed to keep that in payment, which was something. No, but I had expected, and my family had expected, the life insurance would cover the balance owed. But, I mean, this was an actual kick in the head, because, in fact, a significant amount was still outstanding. And when I queried the provider of the life insurance, I was to learn that the life insurance was being paid on what they termed a graduated basis.
Mm-hmm.
So as you got nearer to finalising your mortgage, and remember Jim was 20 years into a 25-year mortgage, the amount that you were getting out was actually, I mean, unbelievably decreasing. So what that actually meant, that even though they paid out, there was a substantial deficit still owing. So, you know, I would urge your listeners today to check their life insurance, to check their critical illness cover if they're lucky enough.
Well, you'd
to
expect
have that.
It all. I mean, listen, I think the nature of it is that it does decrease, but you'd expect it to decrease in line with the mortgage reducing, so that even if there were 1 year or 5 year remaining on a mortgage, or 20 years for that matter, that the life insurance would cover the entirety of the mortgage. Because when you take out the life insurance, it is with a view to settling the mortgage if the worst could happen.
That is absolutely what I thought. But I mean, you know, everybody needs to read their small print, and who does? Who does?
So you begin engaging with this company then, you know, there's this shortfall that neither Jim would have, nor you or anyone else would have expected would be there. This is on a house, effectively, by the way. This is a defective concrete block home, in case anyone's missed the start of this. What is the engagement with this company like post learning that the life insurance policy doesn't clear the debt?
Well, then what I had to do, I had to make an offer to them. So on the basis of the deficit, I made a formal offer to the Vulture for a settlement, and my family were not able to find the money. We're not able to find the money that the Vulture Fund then said they needed. So I offered them half the balance owing, and they were adamant at every turn that no settlement could be made on this particular portfolio. You know, I knew at that stage then that both my resolve and my ability as an advocate would be stretched to the very limit in achieving any possible settlement agreement.
And the amount of information you provided them in terms of the what this property is, how degraded it is, et cetera, what was that with a view to making them understand that it really has no value as it stands, and therefore the settlement should be accepted? And if that was the motivation, what was their response?
Well, my modus operandi, such as it was, and remember, I'd never done anything like this before, was to provide the Vulture with a comprehensive rationale of why they should accept my offer. So they really needed to know, you know, what they had on their books, and they didn't. So, you know, I kept providing them with information about, you know, how the property was defective. It was structurally unsound. It couldn't be rented. It couldn't be sold. It couldn't be insured. It couldn't be demolished without the consent of the attached neighbour. And he wasn't willing to give indemnification because he has shared, you know, he has some shared chimneys and that, and his house is absolutely rotten to the core too. I also provide the Vulture with signatures of dozens of homeowners in the estate who were concerned about the structural integrity of the house. You know, like after Storm Owen, chunks of the house came off. It blew, it's close to the main road, it blew across the road, fascia and soffit was coming off, blowing across the road onto people's paths. And, you know, I mean, the house was uninsurable, and I was very, very concerned that a pedestrian or a car would be hit by flying masonry. I mean, the chimney was badly cracked. I also provided them with letters from the adjoining neighbour. He was very concerned about the impact each house was having on each other, with both of them. Like, it was a case of the woodworm holding hands here.
Mm.
You know, I sent photographs and a video of the property before and after Storm Owen, charting the alarming degradation. I outlined the fact that research by international concrete experts had taken place at a property in the same estate. So a few doors up from Jim's house, international experts had come in, taken cores, and that actually provided the foundation for the research, mm-hmm. which was documented, on Saturday.
So really the nuts and bolts of this effectively is it's only when you sort of, and the penny dropped, that the Vulture Fund were effectively made feel that they're actually liable, really, if anything were to happen as a result of this, that they finally accepted your first offer a year on. I mean, and God knows how much effort on your behalf. Well, we know because you've been outlining it, but you eventually got something over them at the very least then.
At the very end, I rang them and I said, you know, this house is a liability to me. It is a liability to you. And I said, I am putting you on notice that you will be responsible for this house. Mm. And they said, how can you do that? I says, by your absolute intransigence in reaching a settlement with me, you know, and I'm holding you responsible. I think that they were very, very concerned about that.
I know. Go ahead, Anya. Yeah. Go ahead.
I also provided them with the Paul Dunlop research and the international research, which, as I say, was taken a few doors up. And I would say that I really wanted to punch home to them that this house was a liability and that the only person to which this house could be of any benefit was our daughter, because our daughter could come under the defective concrete block scheme, as Jim had bequeathed the house to her after his death. And I had got the scheme through as a demolition on the estate. Unfortunately, Jim was too ill to take up on that. But I had made a promise to him that I would do my utmost to get this house back for our daughter.
And Anne, the thing that in all of this story as well, and again, this is just the layers of this, is that as much as you tried to insulate, and those around Jim tried to insulate him from this, so much of his final days, whereby maybe focuses should be elsewhere, was probably inevitably going to be on this house, this crisis. Will his daughter be okay? Except, you know what I mean? Like, will things work out like that? And no one with that diagnosis should have to end their days like that. As I say, despite the best efforts of everyone trying to insulate him as much as one possibly could. But what we've learned about this crisis is that's impossible. We can't protect our children from it. We can't protect the vulnerable. We can't protect those with a terminal diagnosis, because it's so intertwined in every aspect of life.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right, Greg. It broke Jim's heart. I mean, he'd lost his livelihood. He'd lost his health. He'd lost his home, and he finally lost his life through the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Like, none of these, COVID wasn't his fault, the defective concrete block scheme wasn't his fault, cancer wasn't his fault. I mean, you know, you could say that he felt extremely failed, and although he made a will giving this house to our daughter, you know, he had said to me, look what I'm giving her. I am giving her a liability, you know, and that was just so sad that he felt that he had nothing to give.
Yeah, well, I'm sure over his life he gave so much that his daughter can carry with her. But I do understand exactly where you're coming from. But thankfully, we can see through that ourselves after someone's passing. You know, in how not just those with defective concrete, but those who were impacted by the sale of these mortgages, non-performing mortgages. And you're quite right in saying, you know, I went through 10 years where I couldn't pay my mortgage. The letters, the phone calls, there were credit cards there as well. I think lots of us were in the same boat. It's an absolute living nightmare. You know, and whilst we're sort of maybe lucky enough to get interest rates of, you know, 3.1, 3.5, some people had their mortgages passed over and facing 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, they see the EC bank dropping interest rates. It doesn't matter a dot to them because their mortgage provider isn't. They want to really get them out of their house effectively. That's where there is potentially more oversight from the government possible, I think.
But isn't it amazing to think and disgraceful that, you know, not only have our government presided over this egregious failure, but on top of that, they wheel in vulture funds to then add insult to injury, to pick over the bones of families. Families are not non-performing loans. Families are families. Mm-hmm. And in good faith, they took out mortgages. Mm. And then these vulture funds are wheeled in to pick over their bones when through no fault of their own. I mean, we have to come up with more creative ways to deal with people, families. You know, one way of doing it is like to change, instead of people paying mortgages, if they can't pay their mortgages, then they should be rent. Then that should be changed into a rental system. That house should be changed to a rental house where that family can stay in their house, and rather than paying a mortgage on it, they can stay in that house.
Ironically, Anne, that would mean the state taking over these properties, and as much as there can be a resistance in funding the rebuilding of them, they certainly probably wouldn't want to take them over themselves and have an asset worth nothing. But I take your point, Anne, and there has to be solutions, and I appreciate your time, and I'm sorry for everything everyone has gone through. You said what happens, it adds insult to injury. Adds injury to injury too, doesn't it? I know it's a turn of phrase you used, but it's injury on top of injury on top of injury.
We must repel the use of vulture funds. I mean, every one of us cannot just sit back. You know, we really, really must use every opportunity to, go to our elected representatives and say no more. We must get rid of vulture funds. They didn't just come in here without being invited. They were invited in here, and we must get them out the way they came in. They have to go. And I mean, I am very happy to put up a template letter, if you would be happy to put it in your website, that people can use to contact their elected representative to say that, you know, to lobby that these vulture funds be got rid of, just brought out the way they were brought in.
All right, Anne. Listen, thanks for your time. And the one comfort Jim could have was strong people around him advocating for him. And I'm sure he took comfort from that. For now, Anne, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
That is Anne Owens there. What a remarkable story. And you know, I know there is, for a lot of people out there, there's a bit of DCB exhaustion. You know, sick of talking about it, move on. Is there nothing else to talk about? That's bound to be there. Unfortunately, there's people finding out they're affected by this all the time. Thousands and thousands of our family, friends, neighbours, ourselves affected by this. And often, you know, the bricks and mortar and the crumbling blocks and the scheme, it doesn't account or doesn't talk to the devastating impact this is having on individuals, on people. And I just thought, we thought as a team, important to talk to Anne to try and understand that this isn't just about blocks and stuff. As important as that is, this is about us as humans and what we're having to endure and the impact it has, the lasting impact it has on people. And very sadly, the dominance it can have on the final stages of someone's life. There's a very exciting event being run by Donegal Horizons. It's Stars in Their Eyes. It's on Thursday, the 24th of April in the Mount Errigal Hotel, Letterkenny. It's at 7 p.m. and it's in association with MS Ireland and the Northwest 10K. I'm going to be speaking to two of the participants shortly. But first, Seamus Friel, Senior Client Facilitator, Key Worker with Donegal Horizons. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Joey Sweeney is with us as well. Hi, Joey.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. And Anthony Gallagher. How are you, Anthony?
I'll get you. Hi, I'll get you.
You're doing good?
Okay. I will.
I'll chat to you guys in a sec. Seamus, Donegal Horizons behind this event. It's going to be great fun, isn't it? It's a lip sync battle, is it? Or what? Why? Or it depend on what the performers wish to do?
It's kind of more depends on what the performer wants to do. It's kind of we're trying to do it. It's different from lip sync battle because there was a few of them that happened there this past, you know, 6 months or so. So I kind of wanted to try something different, and they're all for it, and they absolutely love it. It's fun, the rehearsing and stuff I get there.
I'd say it's great crack. So it's all local participants, and they're going to be transforming into their favourite musical icons to perform top hits. So it's going to be a massive buffet of different stuff, I'd imagine. So, yeah.
There's a lot of different, myself and Anthony here performing together.
So now Stavros Flatley, Anthony, is this off? Was this they made the break on Britain's Got Talent, didn't they?
Yeah, since 2019.
Yeah, right. And you have wrote Seamus in to perform this with you.
Yeah.
And how's rehearsals going?
All good. He's some man.
Is he some man for
yeah,
one
yeah,
man?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
He's keeping me right, don't
I? Yeah.
That's fun. Because it's, I mean, like, listen, the guys were good crack, but they also can dance, so there's a bit of pressure on.
Aye.
And what song are you dancing to?
We're in Dancing to the One Direction.
Which one?
That's your boy band one. You're doing the boy, he's doing a boy
band. Oh, you're
band
doing two, aren't you? You're in the boy band as well?
Yeah.
So One Direction, and then you're going to be coming out to Stavros Flatley.
Yeah.
All right, so you're doing two brilliant stuff. Joey, you're Bob Seger.
Yeah.
And why did you pick Bob Seger?
Because I like rock and I like that kind of music and I just said I wanted to do that.
And do you know what song yet of his that you've chosen?
Old Time Rock and Roll.
Oh, wow. Well, Old Time Rock and Roll, that's going to be a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
Are you dressing up as well? Or?
Yeah, and the beard and the moustache and a guitar and a shirt. And
brilliant stuff. Fantastic. And how's your rehearsals going for you?
Very good. We've only 2 more weeks and that's it. Like, we're on stage.
And at this stage, Joey, are you excited? Are you nervous? Can you wait for it to happen?
Excited.
Yeah, it's going to be brilliant stuff. Talking of costumes and dressing up, Anthony.
Yeah.
You just have to take stuff off.
No.
Huh?
No. And then we're putting off the wigs. We're going to throw them all into the audience, Jamie.
All right, okay. As long as it's just the wigs.
Aye.
And do you know what One Direction song you're doing as well?
We're in the club, I Make You Beautiful.
Oh, well, hey, that's. And how many of yous are in that performance?
There's Brannigan McHugh.
Yep.
And there's me and my buddy, Joey.
Yep.
And Nigel. And Kim Baird.
Brilliant stuff. So, Joey, are you looking forward more to going out on your own as Bob Seger or going out with Anthony as One Direction?
I like the two.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, and loads of friends and family will be in the audience cheering us on as well. Seamus, tickets are available now. It's going to be a great night, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully, and there's still tickets available. Contact me or actually the Donegal Horizon Centre and I can sort tickets, and there's also you can just pay at the door. So we're hoping for a massive crowd in the night because it's something we'll
a lot of effort's gone into this rehearsing flat out and 2 weeks of intense rehearsing as well.
Like it's something we'll remember for the rest of our lives, you know.
Yeah.
So it'd be a bit of crack, you know.
I think you might remember this for the rest of your life as well, Seamus.
I think so. These are keeping me right, don't they?
Yes, Fred.
Have you got your outfit ready and everything? What for? Have you seen the show? You have seen it, haven't you?
I have.
All right, okay.
Thankfully, we'll not be doing
I know way. I know Jimmy's wife, Emer, played for the LGFA.
Right.
Football thing.
Okay. Emer.
Emer for you.
Is Emer performing or is she going to be in the audience?
Well, she might be like in the audience too.
Brilliant stuff. And I'd say she's a big One Direction fan, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe even Bob
Seger. Taking down some of her students from Loretto Common. They're actually helping us out.
Fantastic.
On the day, and which is very good.
You really should come down and watch it.
Joey, I'd love to come down. It sounds like it's going to be fantastic fun. And it's on a good night too. It's on Thursday night and it starts nice and early as well. And it's for a great cause. But sure, the place will be packed, Joey.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. And you'll have all the sound and the lights and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nearly like Paul McDevitt.
And Jimmy Stafford. Not, don't tell
and
them.
And Dave James.
Yeah, but don't tell them. It's better than all of them. As good as they are. Right, as good as they are. And Lee Gooch. Is anyone going to perform as Lee Gooch? How would you do that?
Well, the first day I saw him since Jimmy J used to work in Mara College for 2 years.
Right.
And afterwards we saw Lee Gooch. when she went to your sister Natalina, Blaney, yours and Mara College, and you know.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, how many acts are there? I mean, there's a mixture and stuff, but it's going to be full evening of entertainment.
There's 14 acts, and then we have a special guest in with Jason McHale, who's going to do a part. Jordan O'Keefe is going to do a part, and then the Loretto Common Prefects are going to come down and do one of their acts. Wow. And also, our MCs on the night are the V&M podcast. Vinnie and Marty, which is absolutely massive for us to have them there. They're,
what are they going to do? Sorry, I was looking at Anthony playing up to the camera here. Go ahead. What?
They're doing the MCing.
Oh, are they? Brilliant. Well, so, they're a class act, them too.
So they're an act on themselves.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Well, their performance. Yeah. Okay, that's brilliant. Well, fair play to the lads. They're never wanting. They'll do anything for you. So it's Stars in Their Eyes, live performances, a bit of lip sync, but it's all about the stage show. Tickets are €15. Family deals are available. A ton of effort has gone into this, not just from the performers, but also those that are organising it. We'll put a big link to where you can get the tickets for Thursday, the 24th of April at 7 p.m. Tickets will be available on the night at the door, but it'd be great for them to get a good idea of the big numbers that are going to be there by contacting Seamus, and we'll link his details on our socials. Right, brilliant stuff. We don't want to ruin it, right? So I'm not going to ask anyone to perform.
All right.
But what we can promise, Anthony, we can promise people are going to be, they'll be entertained.
I'm going to say hello to my sister Katrina, my parents Brian Jared, and hello to the Morrow College as well. And hello to the people out there, and John McCaffrey and Lisa and Kit McCaffrey and Grayson Schnog and all McCaffrey's and the girls out there.
All right. Anyone you want to say hello to, Joey?
Down in our centre, hello to everybody down there.
And Jimmy and Paul and Lee Gooch, who all got mentions as well. James. And David, sorry, I forgot. Got David James. I could
Donald Kavanagh.
And Donald Kavanagh. All right, brilliant stuff. Joey, you know the whole crew. Fair play to you.
The staff member, Don Lafferty's getting married next year, named Jade. So I'll make sure to him as well. And staff, you know, like Tim, Conor McDermott starting in Strabane. And even Kenny works in Kendana. That's the first time working when they came in.
Brilliant. Great stuff. All right, fantastic. Well done. Anthony, thanks so much for calling up. Look forward to Stavros Flatley alongside Seamus and also One Direction. Joey Sweeney is going to be performing as Bob Seger.